Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 105.
Cao Ming dies on campaign.
Right, battlefield death. And he'd left very clear final orders. Mm-hmm. Wei Yan, the top general out there.
He was supposed to do what?
Guard the rear, conduct a careful strategic withdrawal back to Shu, maintain order.
But Wei Yan, well, he had other plans.
He didn't just ignore the order. He went nuclear, almost literally for the time.
His first move?
Burn the plank roads. The Zan Dao, the only real way back through the mountains to Hanzong and the Shu heartland, order them completely destroyed.
Wow. That's not just delaying things. That's isolating the entire army. Mm. An act of, well, rebellion.
Totally. Those Zan Dao were vital infrastructure. Burning them cuts off supplies, cuts off retreat. It's basically a declaration of war against Yang Yi and the loyalists. Mm.
And Yang Yi must have been stunned.
Absolutely. But also, maybe not entirely surprised. The sources say Yang Yi saw this as proof Cao Ming was right all along.
Right, about the anti-bone, the fango.
Yeah, that old suspicion. Cao Ming supposedly saw this physical sign on Wei Yan's skull, indicating he was fated for treason. Superstitious, maybe, but Wei Yan's actions seemed to confirm it instantly.
Okay, so roads burning. What next? The information war.
Exactly. Both sides knew they had to get their story to the emperor first, win the court. So they frantically write up official reports. Bio, they're called.
Each accusing the other guy of treason.
Yep. And Wei Yan's report actually gets there first. His story is pretty stunning.
What did he claim?
He claims Yang Yi has seized control, stolen Cao Ming's coffin, huge symbolic deal, and is planning to defect to the enemy state, Wei.
And lead them into Shu. Wow.
Yeah. And Wei Yan says, I only burned the roads to stop Yang Yi's treason, to protect the state. Defensive treason, basically.
Okay, that's quite the spin. What about Yang Yi's report?
His is simpler, maybe more institutionally believable. He just says, Wei Yan refused a direct order from the dying chancellor.
The order to guard the rear.
Right, and now he's actively committing treason by burning the roads, trapping the loyal army, and, significantly, the chancellor's coffin.
So the emperor, Lu Shan, gets these two completely contradictory reports. How can he possibly know who's telling the truth? Miles away, no instant communication.
Exactly. And just to pile on the pressure, the sources bring in the supernatural element.
Ah, the omens.
Yeah. The emperor was apparently already freaked out. He dreamed that Jinping Mountain, this important peak near Chengdu, had collapsed.
A bad sign.
A very bad sign. And then an official, Gyozu, comes forward and says, yeah, I saw it too, in the sky.
Saw what?
A red horned star falling from the northeast towards the southwest. The cosmic announcement of Cao Ming's death. When things get chaotic, people look to the heavens. Yeah.
Okay, so the emperor is terrified, politically confused, maybe cosmically doomed. He's got Wei Yan, famous hero, brave general, saved the state countless times.
A known quantity, militarily. A powerhouse.
And then there's Yang Yi, a scholar, an administrator. Good with logistics, probably, but not a battlefield commander.
It's a classic dilemma. Military muscle versus bureaucratic trust. Who do you bet on? The guy with the swords, or the guy who managed the paperwork and supplies.
This is where experience in the court matters, right?
Absolutely. The Empress Dowager, Wu Taihu, steps in. She brings the history.
What does she say?
She reminds everyone that the former emperor himself, Liu Bei, the current emperor's dad, was always wary of Wei Yan.
Because of the anti-bone thing again?
That suspicion, yeah. Liu Bei apparently wanted to execute him way back, but kept him around because he was undeniably courageous and skilled in battle.
So she's digging up old dirt, basically.
But effective dirt. Then she makes the case for Yang Yi. She argues, look, Cao Ming trusted this guy, Yang Yi, with the absolute core functions of the state.
Which were?
Logistics Chaidu Lian Cao and military strategy planning Kanzan Junji.
Let's linger on logistics there. Chaidu Lian Cao. It sounds dry, but back then...
It was everything. Controlling the grain, the food supply, from planting to transport to distribution, that was the lifeblood of Cao Ming's campaigns. He trusted Yang Yi with that.
If you control the food.
You control everything. Armies, people. Rebels usually want military glory, quick power grabs. They don't typically want to manage spreadsheets and grain shipments for years.
So her argument is... Yang Yi's whole career profile makes him an unlikely candidate for a sudden, violent rebellion. It doesn't fit.
Exactly. It's character assessment based on long-term trust and responsibility.
And does the court buy it?
They do. The counselors rally behind her logic. Zheng Wan, a top official, steps up.
What's his take?
He admits Yang Yi isn't perfect. Says he's quick-tempered, Bingxing Guoji, can't handle disagreement well, sharp tongue.
Okay, so he's honest about the flaws.
Yeah, but he says he's definitely not a rebel. And then he does something incredible.
What's up?
He offers his entire household, family, servants, everyone, Liang Jin, as security for Yang Yi's loyalty.
Whoa, that's putting everything on the line. If he's wrong, they all face execution.
It's the ultimate political guarantee, an absolute commitment that carries immense weight with the emperor.
And he contrasts this with Wei Yan.
Sharply. Jiang Wan says, I risked everything for Yang Yi, but I cannot vouch for Wei Yan. He calls Wei Yan arrogant, obsessed with his past achievements, Shi Gong Wu Gao.
Basically saying Wei Yan thinks he's above the rules because he won some battles.
Precisely. And Don Yen, another counselor, agrees. He points out that Wei Yan only behaved himself because he was genuinely afraid of Kong Ming.
With Kong Ming gone, the leash is off.
The fear is gone. So Wei Yan's arrogance and ambition are bound to run wild. The court consensus shifts decisively towards Yang Yi.
And this is where Jiang Wan hints at Kong Ming's foresight, right?
Yes. He reassures the terrified emperor. He says, essentially, don't worry. Kong Ming knew Wei Yan. He must have left Yang Yi a secret plan on Yiji.
Otherwise, Yang Yi wouldn't have been able to even get the army moving safely towards that pass Wei Yan was blocking.
Exactly. It implies Yang Yi already holds the key to dealing with Wei Yan, thanks to Kong Ming.
So Yang Yi does have a plan. He finds the main roads block burned.
Impassable. So he and General Jiang Wei, another key loyalist, they don't try to force it. They do something unexpected.
They go around.
Way around. They take this tiny, rough side path called Chashan, probably a goat track, a flanking maneuver Wei Yan clearly wasn't expecting.
He's sitting in Nan Valley thinking he controls the only route.
Right, waiting for them to try and push through the wreckage or maybe lay siege. He's not expecting them to pop up behind him.
This sets up the confrontation. How does Yang Yi handle it? Does he just attack?
No. First comes the psychological blow. Yang Yi sends his vanguard leader, He Ping.
And He Ping.
He doesn't charge. He rides up close enough to Wei Yan's troops. Remember, most are just regular Shu soldiers. And he shouts at them.
What does he say?
Something like, hey, look around. You're Sichuan guys. You have families back home. Why are you helping this traitor who burned your own escape route? Who betrayed the chancellor?
Appealing to their loyalty, their homes.
Exactly. Their identity. And the sources say it worked instantly. San Quidabon, most of them just scattered, deserted on the spot.
Wow, just like that. They realized Wei Yan wasn't fighting for them.
He was fighting for himself. So suddenly, Wei Yan's big army is down to maybe 300 diehard followers. And crucially, his most trusted general, Ma Dai, is still with him.
So Wei Yan is cornered, furious. What's his next move? He considers defecting.
Briefly, yeah, to the Wei kingdom. But then Ma Dai steps in, the guy Wei Yan thinks is his last loyal commander.
And Ma Dai suggests
something bolder. Defect. Why serve them? Let's seize Hansong ourselves, then take Sichuan. We can rule.
Playing right into Wei Yan's ego. That Shi Gong Wu Gao again.
Perfectly. Wei Yan is overjoyed. Thinks this is his moment. His destiny. This is exactly what Kong Ming anticipated.
The trap is set. Wei Yan and Ma Dai lead their small force to attack the city of Nanchang.
Confident. Arrogant. And this is when Yang Yi finally plays his trump card. The brocade pouch.
Mm.
The Jin Yang, Kong Ming's final instruction. Yeah. And the instruction inside is specific, dramatic. Only open it when you are face to face with Wei Yan on the battlefield.
So Yang Yi rides out, not to fight, but to talk.
To taunt, really. Calmly. He basically says, Wei Yan, Kong Ming saw this day coming. He left a challenge for you.
And the challenge is?
Almost laughably simple. Designed purely to trigger Wei Yan's pride. Yang Yi says, if you could just shout, who dares kill me, 3 times while you're on your horse, I'll surrender Nanjing. The whole city, the army, it's yours.
That's brilliant. Kong Ming wasn't betting on swords or numbers. He was betting on Wei Yan's own colossal arrogance.
100%. Wei Yan had spent his life proving his strength. Being asked to just shout a boast, it's an insult he can't resist proving wrong.
So Wei Yan laughs.
Roars with laughter. Says he could shout it 30,000 times, let alone 3. He puffs himself up, gathers his breath for the first shot.
Who dares kill me?
He barely gets the first syllable out.
And then?
Ma Dai, the loyal lieutenant, moves from behind Wei Yan and, in one stroke, cuts off his head. Instant execution.
Ma Dai was in on it the whole time.
The whole time. Operating under Imiji, a secret, separate plan given directly to him by Kong Ming before he died, Wei Yan's closest ally was Kong Ming's chosen assassin.
Just... wow. Flawless execution, literally. Yeah. The poem you mentioned sums it up.
Yeah, it captures that total foresight. Kongming knew Weiyan would rebel. The pouch held the strategy. Success was already guaranteed. He didn't just stop a civil war. He engineered an assassination using trust as the weapon.
Okay, so Weiyan is dead. Order restored.
Instantly, Ma Dai rejoins Yang Yi. Mission accomplished. They escort Kongming's coffin back to Chengdu.
Well, the reaction in the capital.
Profound mourning now. The political crisis is over, replaced by genuine grief. The sources say the sound of weeping shook the earth. Ai Sheng Zendi, they truly revered Kongwen.
So judgments and rewards follow. Yang Yi.
He actually presents himself tied up, seeking forgiveness for acting without direct imperial orders, a smart political move to show what wasn't grabbing power.
And the emperor.
Unbinds him immediately, praises him for following Kong Ming's plan, saving the state, promotes him to central military advisor, Song Junji.
And Ma Dai, the executioner,
gets Wei Yan's old titles and rank. Rewarded for his town Ichigong, his rebel-quelling achievement. Loyalty to Kong Ming's final wishes is paramount.
What about Kong Ming's burial? It reflects his character, you said.
Very much so. His final will, his Yi Biao, specified burial at Dingjun Mountain, but with incredibly humble instructions.
Oh, what?
No walls, no bricks, no stones around the tomb, no grave goods, no sacrificial objects. Bu Yong Kong Yon Suan Chi, Yubu Yong Yiki Jibu. Just a simple burial mound.
Reflecting his service to the state, not personal glory.
Exactly. Though he did receive a posthumous title. Loyal and martial marquise, Zhang Wu Hu.
And his story, his unfinished work, becomes legendary. That Du Fu poem.
Right, one of China's greatest poets, lamenting Kong Ming centuries later. Chu Shi Wei Shi Zhan Xin Chong's Chang Xing Shon Lei Michin.
Which means?
He died before his mission was completed, which always fills heroes with tears. It just captures the tragedy of Xu Han, embodied by Kong Ming's fate. A mind so brilliant, it even planned for its own absence.
And then?
The source says they heard Sun Quan was moving troops near the border. That immediate fear must have been overwhelming in Chengdu. Was Wu going to break the alliance?
Oh, the panic was real. Lu Shan, the later lord, gets this report. Sun Quan's general, Quan Kong, moving tens of thousands of troops to Bakui, right near the Shu border. Lu Shan was apparently terrified. He thought, this is it, Wu's making its move.
But the new leadership, Xian Wan, steps up. He doesn't panic. What does he advise?
A very calm, two-pronged strategy. Sensible, really. First, prepare for the worst. Deploy troops Wang Ping, Zheng Yi to Yongin. Strengthen the border defenses.
Okay, defense first.
But second, and crucially, diplomacy. Send, as the source puts it, a smooth-tongued diplomat to Wu. The mission, officially report Zhu Zhiliang's death. But more importantly, sound out Sun Quan. What are his real intentions?
And the man for the job is Zong Yu. He volunteers for what must have felt like a pretty dangerous mission.
Definitely. He goes to Wu, and Sun Quan, you know, puts on a show of mourning, but then immediately confronts him. Why, he asks, has Shu suddenly boosted its defenses at Beidi near his border?
Ooh, testing him right away.
Yeah.
How does Zong Yu handle that?
Brilliantly. It's a masterclass in diplomacy. He doesn't make excuses. He doesn't apologize. Instead, he basically says, look, circumstances change. If us increasing defenses at Beidi is justified, then your troop movements at Bakui are equally justified. Allies shouldn't really question each other's necessary precautions in times like these.
Wow. That completely neutralizes the accusation, doesn't it? Puts them on equal footing.
Exactly. It takes away any sort of moral high ground Sun Quan might have been trying to claim. And Sun Quan, interestingly, isn't offended.
No.
Quite the opposite. The source says he was impressed. Praise Zong Yu, even said he was as good as, or maybe better than, the veteran diplomat Deng Zhi.
High praise indeed.
Then Sun Quan assures him, no, the troops at Baki, they were sent to help Shu, just in case Wei tried to take advantage. And then this very dramatic gesture.
What was that?
He breaks a gold-tipped arrow, a Jinpi Zhan. It's a powerful symbol, a solemn oath. He's swearing he will never break the alliance. He even sends an envoy back with Zong Yu, bearing offerings to formally mourn Zhu Jiliang.
So the external crisis, the biggest immediate threat, is handled. Alliance secured. What about inside Shu, the succession?
That proceeds pretty smoothly following Zhu Jiliang's own deathbed wishes. Lu Shan appoints Jiang Wan as the new chancellor and grand general. Fei Yi becomes president of the secretariat, basically sharing the chancellor's duties.
Spreading the load a bit.
Seems like it. And militarily, Jiang Wei and Wu Yi are put in command of the troops stationed up in Hanzhong. So structurally, things look stable.
But you mentioned personal drama. Stability often comes at a cost, doesn't it?
It certainly did here. And this leads us to the tragic story of Yang Yi. He was a long-serving senior official under Zhu Jianyang. He felt, perhaps justifiably, that he deserved more.
He felt he should have gotten Jiang Wan's job.
Pretty much. He saw Jiang Wan promoted above him and felt his own contributions, his own merit, weren't properly recognized. He felt overlooked, maybe even betrayed.
And this resentment, it boils over.
It does, disastrously. He confides in Fei Yi, the new president of the secretariat, and what he says is just breathtakingly bitter. He apparently claims he should have just taken the whole army and defected to Wei right after Zhu Gailiang died, rather than face this lonely desolation, as the source puts it, Jimo Ruchie.
Wow. Saying that out loud, especially to someone like Fei Yi, was he serious, do you think, or just venting in the worst possible way?
It's hard to say for sure. It sounds like bitterness and despair talking, maybe not a concrete plan, but you can't say something like that in his position. Fei Yi had no choice, really. He had to report it to Liu Shan.
And the little lord.
Furious. Understandably so. Treason's treason. He orders Yang Yi's execution immediately.
But it doesn't end there.
No. And this, I think, speaks volumes about the new leadership, particularly Jiang Wan. He intervenes.
To save Yang Yi. Why?
Jiang Wan argues for leniency. He points to Yang Yi's long record of service, his past merits. He suggests banishment instead of death.
Is that just mercy? Or is it politically savvy? Showing the court they won't just purge anyone who feels disgruntled.
I lean towards politically savvy. It shows restraint, values past loyalty, even in the face of, well, terrible judgment. It avoids the look of a ruthless purge right at the start of their administration.
So what happens to Yang Yi?
He's stripped of his rank and exiled to a place called Hanjiading County. But the shame, the frustration, it seems it was too much for him. The source says he was so consumed by it all that he took his own life. Committed suicide in exile.
A tragic end. So Xu Han navigates this incredibly tricky period, external threat averted, succession managed, internal dissent contained, albeit painfully.
Yes, they stabilize. Now let's use that as our point of contrast. Because while all this is happening in Xu, what's going on in Cao Wei?
Well, initially it seems okay, right? There's a brief lull in fighting across all three kingdoms. Sima Yi is made Grand Commandant, secures the borders. It looks like a time for Wei to consolidate its strength.
It should have been. But Emperor Cao Rui, he goes in a completely different direction. He seems to almost completely check out of actual state affairs.
And gets into
building massive, colossal, incredibly expensive building projects. Palaces in Xuchang, halls in Luyankaoyang Hall, Taiji Hall, the Zongzheng Tower that was apparently Tenzheng high. Pure vanity projects.
The scale must have been immense. Who was doing the work?
The projects were overseen by a figure named Ma Jun, noted for his skill, but the labor force. It's staggering. Over 30,000 skilled artisans, yes, but also 300,000 common laborers working day and night.
300,000. That's draining the kingdom's resources, its manpower.
Absolutely grinding them down. The sources speak of widespread exhaustion, deep popular discontent, the economy, the people's well-being sacrificed for these monuments to ego.
Did anyone try to stop him? To warn him?
Yes. And this is where you see real courage, actually. The minister of the masses, Dong Shun, steps forward first. He submits a formal memorial.
What did it say?
It condemned the extravagance, obviously, but he also pointed out something deeply insulting to the court's dignity. He'd seen high-ranking officials forced to do manual labor, fu mudantu, carrying wood and earth like common workers. He called it a disgrace.
He must have known the risk he was taking.
Oh, he knew. He explicitly says in the memorial he expects to die for speaking out, comparing himself to a single hair on an ox easily crushed.
And Cao Rui's reaction?
Rage, pure rage. But interestingly, he doesn't execute Dong Shun immediately. Maybe because Dong Shun was so respected, labeled loyal and righteous, he just demotes him to a commoner. But he issues a clear threat. Any more criticism means death.
The warning shot. Did it work?
Not entirely. Another official, a palace gentleman named Zhang Mao, also submitted a warning.
And him?
Executed. Immediately. No hesitation. Cao Rui was walling himself off from any dissent, any reality check.
And the building? It wasn't just about palaces, was it? It took a turn towards something stranger.
Yes, it shifts from mere extravagance to this almost mystical obsession. Cao Rui actually asks Ma Jun, the supervisor, how he can achieve eternal life, immortality.
Seriously, he thought building projects could lead to immortality.
Well, Ma Jun reminds him of an old story, Emperor Wu of the Han Dynasty. He built the Boliang Terrace in Chang'an, and on top, this huge copper figure holding a dish. The Changlu Pan, the dew collecting dish.
Empty.
The dew collected in this dish, called Tianjiang or Ganlu, sweet dew or heavenly nectar, was supposedly mixed with powdered jade. Drinking it was believed to grant longevity, maybe even immortality.
So Cao Rui hears this and thinks,
get me that dish. He orders Ma Jun to go to Chang'an, dismantle the Han Dynasty statue from the Boliang Terrace, which was apparently 200 feet high, and bring the copper figure and the dish back to him.
Regardless of the history, the effort, the potential damage.
Completely disregarded. And then comes this incredible omen. As the workers are up there taking the statue apart, the source says the copper figure's eyes started weeping. Tong Ren Yunzong Shenan Lexia. Tears flowed from the eyes of the metal statue.
That's chilling. A weeping statue. How'd they react?
Well, the universe seemed to react immediately. A sudden violent windstorm hits the terrace. The main pillar cracks. Collapses. The sound described as like heaven tearing and earth collapsing. It crushed over 1,000 workers.
1,000 people dead. Because he wanted a magic dew dish. Did that make him stop?
No, unbelievably no. He just orders them to bring back the broken copper man and the dish anyway. Then he has the pillar, said to weigh 1,000,000 jin, melted down.
To rebuild the terrace?
No, to recast it into even more vanity projects. 2 giant statues called Wenzong figures and 2 colossal copper statues of a dragon and a phoenix, 4 and 3 Zhanghai respectively, purely decorative, immensely costly. He just doubled down.
This is spiraling. Surely someone else tried to reason with him.
One last desperate attempt. Grand Tutor Yang Fu, a very senior, respected figure, he submits another detailed memorial.
What was his argument?
History. He cites historical precedent after historical precedent. King Ji of Xia, King Zhu of Sheng, King Ling of Chu, Qin Shi Huang, all powerful rulers whose downfall was linked to obsessive palace building, extravagance, and ignoring the suffering of their people. He laid it all out.
And Yang Fu knew the fate of the last person who gave advice.
He absolutely did, and the source includes this incredibly poignant detail. Yang Fu states in the memorial that he has already prepared for his own death before even submitting it. He used the phrase, Kao Gan Mu Yu, knocking on the coffin and bathing. He performed his own funeral rites, essentially. He was offering his life along with his advice.
That's profound courage. Offering loyal counsel, knowing it means death.
Ultimate loyalty, really. And Cao Rui's response.
Let me guess. Ignored him.
Completely ignored him. Didn't even punish him, just disregarded the advice entirely and ordered the construction to speed up. Yeah. By this point, his isolation seems total. And the disregard for counsel, for human life, it starts to permeate his personal life too.
How so?
We see this awful incident involving his empress, Empress Mao. Cao Rumi becomes infatuated with another consort, Consort Guo. He starts ignoring the empress.
Okay, palace intrigue. But does it get worse?
Much worse. He holds this spring festival party in the Fanglin Garden. It's lavish, private, and he gives explicit orders.
Right?
No one is to tell Empress Mao about it. Strict command.
But secrets like that rarely stay secret in a palace, right?
Exactly. Somehow Empress Mao finds out. Later, she bumps into Cao Rui and says, apparently quite lightly, maybe even teasingly, Your Majesty had quite the party yesterday in the North Garden.
Oh no, he'd find that unacceptable, wouldn't he? The sign his command was broken.
Completely enraged, he demands to know who leaked it. When no one confesses, he does something horrific. He orders the execution of all the attendants, everyone who was present at the party, dozens, maybe hundreds of people.
Execute them all for a slip comment.
Yes. And then the final act of cruelty. He issues an imperial edict forcing Empress Mao herself to commit suicide. See, scan forced suicide, and immediately installs Consort Guo as the new empress.
That's monstrous. It's pure tyranny. The state resources drained, council ignored, lives thrown away on a whim.
And this internal rot, this chaos and brutality at the very top, it doesn't stay contained. It almost immediately has external consequences.
What happens?
Right after this period of executions, the forced suicide, the installation of the new empress, news arrives from the north. The governor of Yuzu, a man named Wu Qijian, sends an urgent report.
Trouble on the border.
Big trouble. Gongsun Yuan, the commander in Liaodong, has rebelled. He's declared himself the king of Yan, raised his own standard, mobilized an army. He's threatening the entire northeastern frontier. The instability Cao Rui fostered internally is now manifesting as open war.